I am very excited about today's show. The Green Front is where we report the news from the Green Front as it's happening, unfiltered, and that has been what I've been doing for about 15 years now. Things have never been more surreal, just evidence of what we just heard regarding the Lorax and what's going on politically. You know, one wants to laugh, but it's so serious, the consequences and the days that we're wasting every single day and not addressing the climate challenge is very serious business. But we try to bring you the most interesting stories out there, and there are more every day. And I'm very pleased to tell you that we'll be speaking in just a moment with a hunter who is willing to bet his Beretta, in fact, that's what he's doing, that climate change is real. Todd Tanner is going to join us in a moment. And then in our second half, we'll be speaking with a woman I've been aware of for many years and very pleased to finally get her on the show. Lynn Cherry is an author and a writer and a filmmaker, and she has created Young Voices for the Planet. We're going to hear some excerpts from those short films featuring youth and what they're doing while the old people blow hot air about what's going on, some of them. They're taking action and very inspiring. We'll chat with Lynn Cherry in the second half. But first, I'm also thrilled to welcome to the program, back to the program, D.R. Tucker and Todd Tanner. Todd Tanner is the founder and chairman of a group called Conservation Hawks. I was not aware of them until I read this article on Think Progress. Got very excited about the story. It's the story, kind of story I just love to get on, which is outside the box thinking and people who you might not expect to be, you know, on the front lines of climate activism, and yet that's exactly how things are now, because some people who are actually dealing with reality are being, you know, pushed to do some drastic things. Welcome to the Green Front, Todd Tanner and D.R. Tucker.
Hey, yes, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm
great. Todd, let's start with you. I know D.R. loves the story as much as I do. Tell us what prompted you to create Conservation Hawks. We don't usually associate, you know, hunters and sportsmen with, you know, eco-activists, but of course it makes sense because you're out there, you know, in nature and, you know, in encountering nature in all its forms every day.
Well, the big thing, Betsy, is I'm a writer, and I've been writing about conservation, about the outdoors, about climate change, actually, for quite some time. And it became more and more apparent to me as we moved along that I wasn't having any kind of an impact with sort of the more conventional fronts. And
yeah.
We see climate change here, and I'm in Montana, and we see it all the time. I mean, it's literally all around us. The glaciers are melting in Glacier Park. The forests down around Yellowstone, and actually through much of the state, are suffering severely from pine beetles and from some other pests. And those things are exacerbated by climate change. So I literally can't look out my window and not be reminded of what's going on. So it's one of those things. I look at it like I have a little boy. He's six. And it's really, really hard to think that we may not be able to pass along the same things that we've sort of come to take for granted to future generations. And it seemed like, okay, the time is ripe for something a little newer.
And yet we're seeing just the opposite in terms of action, you know, powerful interests and well-fueled interests apparently grabbing hold of at least our Republican candidates for president, even those who once believed in climate change. Newt Gingrich, of course, now chopping a chapter out on climate change from his environmental book. We had climate scientists Catherine Hayhoe on a few weeks ago. She's the author of the chapter he cut out, you know, and she's in disbelief, as is anyone who takes, you know, notice of this, that, you know, you can't believe it and then not believe it. So it's clearly political. It's clearly pandering to, you know, I guess the majority of Republicans, just at a time when we should be, you know, dealing with this on a daily basis, and we should have our leaders, you know, saying we've got a crisis on our hands.
Well, I don't think that there's any doubt about that. And what we are actually trying to do with Conservation Hawks is we'd like to take the politics out of climate and say it shouldn't matter whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. It shouldn't matter if you're liberal or moderate or conservative. If you care about the important things, if you want to pass along a healthy natural world to your kids and your grandkids, if you want to be able to go outside now and spend time out in a beautiful natural environment, if you love to hunt and fish, which our group does, then you need to speak up for these things. And the politics of it really doesn't play a large part. We'd like to get to the point where politicians from both major parties are competing to offer the best ideas on how to deal with the situation and not arguing over whether it's in fact real, because it is real.
Well, the problem is, Todd, is that you talk about taking the politics out of science, but the problem is, of course, that the deniers are insisting that politics play a role in our analysis of science. And to that end, I wanted to ask what you made of the attacks on you and your vow from the denialist blogs, Stop the ACLU and JunkScience.com, and specifically, what do you make of the person who operates Stop the ACLU calling people who deny the science, quote-unquote, climate realists? It's sort of Orwellian to me, but what is your take on that?
Well, I'd actually rather our approach on folks who disagree with us is a little different than maybe the norm. What we've sort of figured out is that if we shout back at someone who shouts at us, everything sort of devolves into this great big brouhaha, and nothing really gets solved, and nothing really gets accomplished. And the people who are reachable hear this huge amount of white noise out there, and they just turn it all off. They tune out. And so we have no interest in engaging in vitriol or in rebutting people with anger, or basically just coming out and saying, "Nah, you don't know what you're talking." We've made the decision that the best way to break through this is not to amp up the wattage on our side of the argument, but to be reasonable about it and to engage in rational discussion. And so when folks refuse to do that, that's fine. That's their option. We live in a free country. This is America.
And but if you're being smeared, don't you have an obligation to fight back?
Well, what we tend to believe is that if somebody says something that's patently wrong about us, and they say it to us, or somebody brings it to our attention, sure, we're going to set the record straight. But there's no need for us to go out and look on the blogosphere or look across all the talk radio channels and say what somebody's saying about us. I don't view that as productive. What I'm really interested in doing is talking to the vast majority of sportsmen. And that's our focus. That's our demographic, is hunters and anglers. And certainly many of those folks are conservatives. Some are liberals. A lot of them are moderates. But we want to reach the folks who either haven't come to an opinion on this, haven't really put much time and effort and thought into it, or maybe have an opinion that's somewhat informed but is still malleable. And I'm not going to do that by being a version of Rush Limbaugh. And I'm not going to do that by yelling and screaming and saying, "Hey, you know, these people are smearing me." I honestly don't, you know, if they want to say that, that's their right. That's fine. But we look at things like we need to be responsible. We need to be respectful. We need to engage in a dialogue with anybody who wants to learn more about this issue. And our ultimate goal is to, as I just alluded to, we want to take the politics out. We want to make it so that it's really, really difficult for a politician of either party to come out and say there is no such thing as climate change, to take a vote like happened in the House last spring, where 240-odd members essentially came out and said, "Well, no, we don't agree with the science of climate change." And I don't think you do that by getting into this vitriolic shouting match. I think you do it by being reasonable and rational and explaining to the people who are willing to listen that this is what's going on. And I think probably the one thing that we really have going for us, I mean, obviously the science is on our side, and we have we're putting together a scientific advisory group as we speak. We've got a couple of nationally recognized scientists on there already. But in addition to the science, we have the ability to tell people, look outside your front door and see what you see, and ask yourself, what incentive do we are other hunters and anglers, we are them. What incentive do we have to lie about this? There is no incentive.
However, you mentioned getting people to open their eyes. You know, what if their eyes are blinded by the rhetoric of such figures as Senator James Inhofe with his new book calling climate change the greatest hoax? How do you get around that? You talk about having the science on your side, but do you have a megaphone on your side? And if not, how do you get people who are on the fence to turn away from the people saying hoax, fraud, scam, conspiracy, and look at the actual science. That's the issue that Betsy and I struggle with.
Right, and that is the, you know, the $64,000 question. There's no doubt about it.
I think they're getting paid more than that, actually.
I wish I was, but unfortunately, that's not the case.
They always say that, and I've been volunteering my time for 15 years covering the environmental beat, trying to wake people up, and it's like greed. I don't think so. The opposite problem. Go ahead.
No, it's just one of those things where we need to engage the sporting public as best we can, and we've been very, very fortunate in that. As a writer and as a communicator, I have pretty good connections in the outdoor industry, and we've had platforms in places like Field & Stream where we've got a little bit of ink. And as we continue to do that, as we get our name out there, and as more people learn about us, and I think the one thing that could really hurt us is if somebody comes out and says, "Oh Lord, these people are communists, or they're socialists, or they." You know, they're the other, whatever the other may be to them in this particular case. And that's not the situation. We are the folks who are out, you know, we're out wading in trout streams, and we're out in our boats casting bass plugs, and we're, you know, we're chasing elk, and we're hunting for pheasants. We are truly a group of people who have no other agenda than to focus on the biggest issues for sportsmen. And the biggest environmental issues, the biggest conservation issues. And we've looked around a lot, and we see, you know, we've checked out any number of problems. I mean, there are a million things that we could be focused on right now. But the one overarching theme that's going to impact all sportsmen, and this is essentially our message, the one thing that will have a huge impact on all of us as we go forward is climate change. And it doesn't matter if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area. It doesn't matter if you're in Portland. It doesn't matter if you're in Orlando or Dallas or Chicago. It doesn't matter if you're here in Montana. If you're a sportsman, if you're an outdoor lover, these things will impact you. And we sort of come at it from the angle that, you know, it's our job to defend our sporting heritage. It's our job to defend hunting and fishing. Because we believe in those things. We believe that they're, you know, that they're vital, that sportsmen have an intimate connection with the natural world that very few other people are fortunate enough to have. We spend so much time outside. We do these things because we love them. We're passionate about them. And so as we go forward, we want to make very, very clear that we have this connection and we see what's going on, and we're simply trying to share this information so that instead of our kids and our grandkids in 20 or 30 years coming back and saying, "My God, what were they thinking? How could they have missed this?" we can say, "We stood up for the right thing. We did the right thing. We organized, we got people together, and we educated," which is a huge aspect of our focus. We are primarily at this point in time educators. We want to get the science in front of people, and we want to get them to say, "You know what? God, that actually makes sense." And as I've said, you know, I don't think that you accomplish that by handing out megaphones and shouting down other folks. I think you accomplish that by engaging the people who are reasonable in the discussion. And eventually what happens is that you're always going to have the fringe. You're always going to have people who are going to say, you know, my income depends upon me not believing in this.
Well, you came up with a clever idea to give up your gun if someone can prove that climate change is a hoax, which, of course, is impossible. And that's a really good approach because, you know, let them prove that, you know, all 98% of the world's climate scientists happen to have made a mistake. I don't think so. You know, those who deny don't know more than any particular climate scientist because it's not coming from, you know, any, except for maybe a few stray ones who are perhaps, if you follow the money, being paid to say that. So I love what you did. It's clever. And are you actually willing to give up your gun, or would you just want to buy another one?
Yeah,
how did you come up with that idea?
I would certainly give up my shotgun. And, you know, one of the things that I'm not sure people understand with this little bit of, this wasn't something that it came about with a lot of forethought. We were playing around on the blog, and it just came to me. My time is really valuable to me. I'm 51. I don't, you know, who knows how much left I have. But, excuse me, how much I have left. But when it comes right down to it, I don't want to waste time doing anything that I don't need to be doing. And I can think of a lot of things I'd rather do than spend time educating people on climate change. So if I'm wrong, and as rational human beings, we have to admit the possibility that could happen. I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's incredibly unlikely that it would happen. But, I mean, you know, we always have to admit that possibility. So if I'm wrong about this, I'd like to know it. I don't want to spend the next 3 years or five
exactly.
years or 10 years of my life doing something when I could be having a positive impact in another area. So people see my offer as sort of this cynical ploy. And on one hand, I can see why they might think that. But on the other, I would really love to find out if I'm doing the wrong thing here. I don't, and as I said, I don't see how that's possible. I don't see how somebody's going to convince me that climate change is a hoax or a fake.
Exactly. That's why I often say, I wish they were right, those who would deny, say it's not
yeah.
real.
Oh, God.
If only. But prove it. That's a good challenge. Prove it.
Yeah, and one of the things that's fascinating to me is that so many of the... I like to call them climate doves because it sort of fits in with our hawks, our conservation hawks image. But so many of the doves out there, and I know that may be offensive to some of the folks who are listening who view doves in a slightly different light from a political viewpoint. But
did we lose them?
We might have.
Oh, dear. Well, let's hope Matt can get him back on the phone. But in the meantime, interesting comments, DR, aren't they?
Definitely. But you know, in reading through some of the attacks on him, my sense remains that if it isn't a dogfight now, it's going to be a dogfight soon. Because, you know, from my perspective, you have to think that's only going to be a matter of time before the people who have attacked Michael Mann and James Hansen et al. Will start attacking him. They've already done so, and they've already tried to smear him as some sort of, you know, front for Marxism or whatever sort of insult they try to come up with.
And I want to, hopefully we can get him back, Todd Tanner, in just a moment. I wanted to ask him about the comments he's made about not believing that if we deal with global warming pollution, if the government actually takes that on, that that's going to be a government, you know, takeover or government intrusion, because he talks about, I think we have him back now, Todd?
Yes, I'm not sure what happened there, Betsy, but I went away.
Not either. I'm glad you're back, because I was really itching to ask you the next question, which is about... You make a very good point about what you would say to people who say this is going to mean a government takeover if we start really, you know, fighting climate change. You say government takeover, government intrusion, you want to see that? Let's do nothing and see what happens then, as the government would have to step in to deal with all the disasters. By the way, overnight, yet again, woke up to the news that there's, you know, yet another devastating, perhaps record storm that hit Missouri.
Oh, I haven't heard about the storm in Missouri. My heart goes out to those folks. Nobody wants to see that.
They lost 40% of the town. I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of the town right now, but go ahead.
No, that's truly sad. As to the government intervention, I think that an awful lot of sportsmen are sort of... they tend to be libertarians. They tend toward that particular aspect where they don't want a lot of government intrusion. They'd rather have more control over their life as opposed to less. And we can all sit down and argue about, you know, what government's role is. But I don't think that anybody who's aware of our political system can doubt that if we don't address climate right now, and that if we put it off for another 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 years, that it will mean less government intrusion in our lives. It will mean more. It will mean all sorts of things that people can't even comprehend, right? You won't be able to drive where you want to. You won't be able to build the size home you want. There are going to be all sorts of restrictions that will come in out of necessity because we'll be so far behind the curve. We'll be in such deep trouble that we'll have to take these huge dramatic steps as quickly as possible. It's going to change American life in ways that I don't think anybody even recognizes or thinks about right now. And so it seems very natural and rational to me to say, by addressing this now, when not to Not to say that the steps that we have to take are small, because they're not. We have to take some pretty big steps, and we have to do them very, very quickly. But by addressing it now, we make it far less likely that we're going to give up our freedoms in the future. And I think that's an important message for sportsmen. It's an important message for a lot of folks out there.
When conservatives say, you know, we can't afford to spend money on fighting climate change, you know, how conservative is it to be, you know, guaranteeing almost that it's going to cost that much more, you know, down the road?
No, we all want to be fiscally responsible, and we want to get the biggest bang that we can for our buck. And the way to do that, every year we put off action on climate change, it raises the cost for us down the road. Mm-hmm. And that's a cost for us. It's increased taxation on our children and our grandchildren. It's passing along hardships to them that we can't even begin to imagine right now. So why would we do that? Why, when, as you pointed out, 97 to 98% of the climate scientists are in agreement that the world is warming, that this warming will have negative impacts on us, and we go forward, we're essentially going to have to deal with this huge, huge problem. And it's, you know, I mean, they're saying that it's not a natural phenomenon. I mean, this is, you know, we know this now. We know it as well as we can know anything. I mean, there have been a huge amount of scientific study on this. So why not say, okay, this is an issue. We have to handle it. Let's move forward. I mean, there are some wonderful benefits if we do this. Mm-hmm. I mean, we get ourselves off Mid-Eastern oil. We stop the huge environmental degradation that we see. We get mercury out of the air and out of the water. We give our kids a cleaner, healthier, hopefully happier life in the future. And I don't really see any downside to addressing climate change. A couple of years ago, I was talking with another outdoor writer at a conservation meeting, and he said the funny thing, and I never hear this from folks who are proponents of addressing climate change, but the funny thing is all the remedial steps, all the work that we need to do to address climate change are things that we should be doing anyway.
Exactly.
And so we had a fellow on the blog this morning who was saying, let's talk about the costs of addressing climate change. And to me, I don't see the costs. I see the benefits. Everything takes money. It will take us a huge amount of money to try and deal with this in 20 years if we haven't started down that road before then.
And we saw that 9 people have been killed in this series of tornadoes across Missouri, Illinois, and Kansas. And, of course, we can't say for sure it was a climate change-induced storm, but we are seeing these, you know, particularly ever more devastating and deadly weather events happen.
It just makes you sad when you hear stuff like that. It's a heartbreak. And
especially because most people who are hit by these storms, you know, may never make the connection because, you know, mainstream media is still not really connecting those dots enough to say this could be, you know, even though if you ask people, they all say we've never seen weather like this. They just don't necessarily continue to, you know, think that it could be climate change behind it, even though it's exactly what scientists have been predicting.
Well, it's certainly consistent with the scientific predictions of more severe storms and greater frequency for those. And, you know, as you've heard time and time and time again, it's probably impossible to tie any particular storm into climate change. But at the same time, the probabilities of those storms happening goes up dramatically because we're not dealing with CO2.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. You talk about, you gave an example in your piece about what would happen if you were walking, you know, with your family and you came across a grizzly and she charges. And you would not do nothing. You would not pretend it's not happening. You would not let her maul you and everything you care about. And yet that's kind of what we're doing here in relation to climate change.
Oh, it's exactly what we're doing. And it's funny, I took some heat from environmentalists on that, who thought that I was referring to, okay, I was going to use my shotgun to shoot the grizzly bear. That wasn't my intent. I was actually thinking about just out for a hike without weapons. But you wouldn't lay down. You wouldn't say, you know, my God, I don't happen to have a rifle with me, so I'm just going to sit here and let her maul me and let her chomp on my little boy and chew on my wife. You wouldn't do those things. What you would do is you would say, I will use everything at my disposal to do the very best I can in this situation. And I think that's what we need to do with climate change. I mean, it's incredible that we treat this as an abstract idea instead of something that's happening to us and will impact our future for as far out as we can envision.
Well, I'm not a gun lover, but I'd have a bet, if I were a betting woman, that you are going to keep your Beretta Silver Pigeon 12-gauge gun, because I don't think anyone's going to be able to prove that climate change is a hoax, as we said earlier, if only.
Well, I would, you know, quite honestly, there's nothing I'd rather do than give that gun away, because it would be so nice not to have this huge weight on my shoulders. I mean, I walk into my little boy's room at night, and he's 6. He's about to turn 7. And I look at him when he's laying there sleeping, and I think of all this promise and potential that he has and how I want to share all these wonderful things with him. And the one thing I see out there that will take that away without any doubt is climate change.
Mm-hmm.
We won't be able to pass along the things that we love to our kids and our grandkids if we aren't willing to step up now and say, you know, this is real, it's happening, and we have to address it.
Exactly.
And, you know, how we all go about the framing and messaging necessary to do that is up to each and every one of us. But, you know, and there's certainly going to be some folks who think we need to take a more confrontational approach than we do. But at the same time, the reality of the situation and the potential severity of it is such that we don't have the option of not taking action here. And so that's what we're trying to get out to sportsmen. That's the message that we have. And we're willing to work with anyone who's hoping to basically share that message with us. And if somebody comes down on the other side of it, regardless of political party, regardless of our agreement with them on other issues, we're gonna show folks that they're wrong, because this is truly important.
And we cannot afford to waste any more time. And yet, I've been saying that for years. You know, it's even later than it used to be, obviously. But we really are just wasting time, and that's what's really deeply frustrating. DR mentioned the hate mail you've gotten. I hope you've received some positive responses as well.
Oh, I would say that the positive stuff has certainly in my own mind, like I said, I don't go out and look for the negative stuff. But the positive stuff that we've gotten has just been wonderful. I mean, we from just run-of-the-mill hunters and anglers, folks who you know, just going about their lives and happen to run across our work someplace, from people in the media, from other conservation organizations. I mean, we've had a groundswell of support for what we're doing, and all across the sphere. And it's really heartening to me. And you know, what we'd like to do is sort of set our flag on this issue and allow other groups, and there are any number of important conservation organizations out there that do just incredible work, and allow them to sort of come in behind us and fill in behind us, because we're sort of bearing the brunt of whatever negativity comes our way. We don't have a problem with that. We've got big shoulders. It's like, okay, you know, somebody wants to yell or scream or point fingers, we can take that. We are right on this issue.
Todd Tanner, thank you for your big ideas as well as your big shoulders. And thank you, D.R. Tucker, for joining me in this very interesting conversation. I love interviews like this. Todd Tanner is the founder and chairman of a group called Conservation Hawks, Hunters and Anglers Defending Our Future. And you've given me hope that there's yet another round of voices out there I didn't know about, asking people to wake up and smell the CO2, get real about what we're facing with climate change. When we come back, we'll be speaking with a filmmaker who will also inspire you, Lynn Sherry, after these messages.